This is a Power 98.7 podcast. Now we're talking. Subscribe to Power 98.7 podcasts in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. There's more on power987.co.za.
It is 10 minutes past the hour, 11 o'clock, as we continue the discussion right here on Power Talk with myself, Nhlanhla Sihume. Welcome to our discussion today with freelance journalist and good governance activist Philip Molisa. We're diving into the recent and unprecedented events in Kenya, where protests over proposed tax hikes have escalated to violence, which has left parts of parliament ablaze and also prompting the government to deploy the military as well. Now, as the nation grapples with these developments, the voice of its youth and the challenges of economic disparity, they've come to the forefront as we continue to look at developments in that particular country. Now, Philip, with your extensive experience in journalism and activism, I really look forward to your insights on the implications of this event, but also speaking to the broader socio-political landscape in Kenya. Firstly, can you provide an overview of the proposed tax hikes that have sparked such a widespread protest?
Yes, thank you so much for having me. Indeed, like you said, Philip in Kampala here. Now, one of the things that happened in this situation is you have a country in the East African region that, among other things, is struggling with inflation, currently above 5%. And, you know, when you look at global recommendations, the IMF and World Bank, when you go beyond 5%, then there is reason to worry. Number two, you talk to a country where a majority of the population is young people, and these are young people who have had a bit of education extensively, but they are unable to get education. And number three, you talk about, like you mentioned in your opening remarks, a country where the disparity between the rich and the poor is very, very huge. And by extension, this is a challenge not only Kenya, but also the region and the continent, if you may say. So at such a time, you come up with a finance amendment bill in the Parliament of Kenya, and you're telling Kenyans that, you know what, with all that is happening and all that has gone wrong in the past, including the high tax to GDP burden that the country is facing currently, when you look at the figures, about $82 billion in debt, the government of Kenya, the government comes out to say that we're going to increase taxes on some of the major items or household items that an ordinary Kenyan is expected to use. You have to increase some money so that we raise money to run the government, to pay up our debt, and to see that we survive as a country. Now, situation as stands, anyone would want to see a country that is able to collect enough tax so as to run their economy. But one of the principles of taxation, they say it must be affordable to the citizen. Now, you are talking to an unemployed young person who are the majority in this situation, and telling them, you know, you are not employed, but you have to pay more for the goods you have to access. Now, you sense a mismatch in those two scenarios. Mm. Increasing taxes to people who are not employed, how are they going to survive? How are they going to afford such commodities? Now, that is what the government of Kenya was trying to do. Increase taxes in a country where there is inflation is high, unemployment, the gap between the rich and the poor, and of course what they call irresponsible expenditure by government officials, when you look at how they live lavishly across in the country and abroad, and it comes out to play that Kenyans said, no, this is not a situation we can contend with, and we need to do something as a people.
So speaking about that, it's quite notable that these or much of these protests are being spearheaded or led by the younger generation. What are the main grievances of these demonstrators, particularly young people, regarding these tax proposals?
Yes, I think it is very important to note that we live in an information age, and young people are the top, at the forefront of this information age. We live in an advent of modern technologies, social media, as we talk about X, TikTok, Facebook, and so on. And young people using these tools, plus, of course, the ingredient of being idle if they're not employed, they spend a lot of time on some of these, using some of these tools. And the information they get out of here now, many governments in this part of the world have thought that young people are distracted in things of leisure and entertainment and showbiz. However, because of the education the young people have, are able to access some of the most crucial information about their governance, and they're able this way to know that, oh, it is governance that is making me unemployed. It is governance that is making me be in the situation. Mm. And when they're using these platforms, it is a tool that has helped them to talk to each other, to mobilize, to share knowledge and understanding of the situation at hand.
Right,
and
right.
Indeed, being the majority using these platforms, that's why you see it is them, walking to parliament to, you know, and when you talk about how the demonstration started, peacefully to tell the government that, you know what, this and this is happening, but we think it is not good for us, and we think there must be a change, as you know, we're doing things.
Mm. You're quite right. The protest began peacefully, but quickly turned violent.
Yes.
I want to speak about some of the factors that you believe led to this escalation, and also looking at the part of government. How is the government's response, including the deployment of the military, how has it influenced the situation on the ground?
Yes, thank you so much. Now, every time you have discontentment and you expect a response from a person in authority, be especially such things that run about with emotions, you know, people are hungry, people have not gone to school, people do not have education, medical care, and so on. These are emotional situations that any response that is to come out to talk to the same has to be steadfast, has to be precise, and has to be spot on. Now, what happens is young people are on the streets and the government is sort of taking its time to look at how things are unfolding. This is how anger now rose among the young people to say, oh, these people seem not to be taking us serious, and they ended up now trying to change course. And of course, when you look at the way the protests unfolded, you could relate it to what we had, the so-called Arab Spring. People start slowly and without a conclusive response, then they start to change formation and mechanisms, and before you know it, they turn violent.
Yeah, you're quite right, because President Ruto has taken a hardline stance against what he calls violence and anarchy as well. How has this stance been received by the general public and rights groups within Kenya?
First, it is very unfortunate that at such a time when a country is at crisis, the leader is indeed, as it looks, unwilling to listen carefully to what the people are saying, because the young people are talking about things. Number one, they are saying, you cannot increase taxes when we don't even have enough jobs to facilitate our lives. You cannot increase taxes on things like bread. You talk about fuel, things to do, education material. These are things that contribute to growth of human capital in a country like Kenya that is looking to propel its economic growth. Number two, when the Kenyan president, President Ruto, was coming in power, I remember including a time when he was in South Africa, he was giving speeches that were so promising for these young people, and being a Pan-African, a very strong one. And when you look at his behavior in the past 1-2 years, you look at a president who is not, you know, walking the talk, a president who promised to empower Africa and,
spend
the African Union. You look at him now, every other day he's in European countries. You talk about recently he has said this in the United States, and Kenyans are saying, no, we did not put you there to go and spend a lot of time discussing. Even if you are discussing Kenyan issues, they must be discussed in Kenya and in the Kenyan context. Kenyan issues cannot be solved elsewhere. So young people are saying, come on, Mr. President, calm down from where you are. Listen to us. Talk these issues. They are Kenyan issues. For example, one of the issues that is being talked about mostly in Kenya is food. And human rights organizations are talking about this. You know, Kenya is one of the countries that are not so interested with the soils that they can do a lot of agriculture. Much of the food they get is imported from within the region, Uganda, Kenya, Tanzania, but also from Europe. And they are immensely affected by the conflict in Russia and Ukraine, and people are struggling to get food, ordinary food, ugali, like they call it in Kenya. Now, if you cannot come out at such a time and talk to Kenyans much politely, trust me, they're going to run violent. They're going to run violent. And this is a risk not for only Kenya, but even the neighboring regions. Talk about like today, starting yesterday in the evening, you had issues with dealing with internet.
Philip, I want to ensure that I want to Philip, I want to ensure that we hear you clearly. It seems that our line is not the best right now. So if you can just move around a bit while we continue in our effort to ensure that we can hear you clearly. Of course, a reminder that we are in discussion with a freelance journalist and a good governance activist, that it's Philip Muisa. We're diving into the recent and unprecedented events in Kenya, where these protests over proposed tax hikes have really escalated to violence, leaving parts of parliament ablaze, but also prompting the government to deploy the military as well. Philip, I do hope that we have you on a better line. So with the international community, including the AU and various Western nations, they've expressed quite a lot of concern around the situation in Kenya. How might this international attention then impact the Kenyan government's approach moving forward?
Yes, very important it is for the international community to realize that the age we are in is the age of globalization, and everything that happens wherever in the world affects every country. A very immediate example is, for example, neighboring Uganda. Most of the trade Uganda does, import and export, goes through the Kenyan port of Mombasa. And if there is turmoil in Nairobi and neighboring counties and provinces, then trade in Uganda is affected. But also, even someone in South Africa or China, there is a South African company that will want to send it to Nairobi, Kenya. If there is turmoil, then certainly that company will not trade, and South Africa will not be benefiting that particular arrangement. And across the world, so it is critical for the international community, the African Union, the East African community locally. Unfortunately, some of the blocks, like the East African community, just like the ECOWAS and SADC, have been so silent or low-going when such circumstances rise in countries, because they don't want to be seen as interfering with the sovereignty of these nations. But it is critically important for the international community to stand up before the situation gets let. Look, we have examples of countries on the African continent that had uprisings that started slowly. I mentioned earlier the Arab Spring. Talk about Libya. The international community did not do enough in that such particular situation. And today, you don't have a stable Libya. You don't have a stable Somalia. Very many countries you can talk about. So it is critical for the international community. And indeed, I expect to see a statement from the African Union. But a statement should not take a whole week, a whole month, when you have people dying. As we speak, tens are dead, tens are injured, you have people displaced, you have reports of abductions by the state, and these are things that cannot be left to move on smoothly and slowly in such an age. We're in 2024. You can't have such a situation unfolding in a country and people are silent as if it's so far from them. It's things that can happen anywhere and anytime to anyone.
And lastly, as we wrap up our conversation, what lessons can be learned from these events in terms of governance, public policy, and civic engagement as well, which is a subject I don't think we're talking enough about?
Yes, thank you so much. I should start with the last point you mentioned, the civic engagement and relations. One of the things you appreciate about the Kenyan young people who call themselves the then Generation Z that are leading this protest or demonstration is that they are aware of what is happening in the country. You get a situation in many African countries where the young people are not informed or aware of what is happening in their countries, their parliaments are discussing issues that affect them directly, but they are not aware. So you really commend these young people for a keen interest in understanding what is happening in their corridors of leadership and try to do something about them. But number two, governments on the African continent must interest themselves in capturing the interest of young people in whatever policy formulation they are doing in these particular countries, because the African continent is one of those that has young people as the majority. If you do not, and we're talking about democracy by the way, so if you cannot give keen attention to young people, then you likely have to lose out on having a citizen that approves of whatever you are doing, which is a key ingredient of progress in any particular country.
Philip, let me thank you for your time. He's been sharing his perspective on the unfolding events in Kenya, the socioeconomic challenges, but also looking at the role of governance and activism. It has been incredibly enlightening as we continue to monitor the situation in Kenya. Of course, joining us from Uganda this time is Philip Muisa, who's a freelance journalist and a good governance activist as well. Thank you so much for your time.
You've been listening to a Power 98.7 podcast. For more podcasts, visit power987.co.za or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.